Welcome to the Business Growth Podcast with me, Kevin Miller. On this podcast, you're going to hear some awesome interviews from business leaders, experts, and entrepreneurs as they share their story, their journey, and some expert tips and insight of the things they've learned along the way. So sit back, enjoy, learn, and grow. And thanks for joining me. Today, I'm joined with the lovely Lisa Evans, and Lisa is a colleague of mine at 897FM. She does a fantastic radio show, In Good Company, with our partner in crime, Louise Kelly. And Lisa is here today to have a chat to us, really, about our business journey and our business, which is speaking savvy and the lots of different and fun and, you know, very valuable and useful things that business does. So good morning, Lisa. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Kevin.
It's funny, we, you know, you're in the radio station, you're like ships in the night sometimes.
You don't
get to talk to people all that often, you know, so this is a good opportunity to have a chat.
It is. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Tell us about your business story. You started a bit later in life with your business, and take us back to the beginning and walk us through it, please.
Yeah, so my background is as a nurse. I started nurse training as soon as I could. So I left school, began my nurse training. I'm from London. And after I did my initial 3 years training, I went on to do another 2 years to become a midwife. That's a pretty cool job, helping to bring new life into the world. And then I did more studies and I specialized to become a neonatal intensive care midwife. So looking after tiny babies on life support.
Yeah.
And so pretty early on in life, I'd found my sort of forever job. I'd found my career and I thought that was going to be it. Mm-hmm. And absolutely loved what I did. So with the dream job came the opportunity to travel, answered an ad in newspaper and got a job in Sydney in RPA hospital.
Oh, wow.
So cool. I came across to Sydney from London. It was supposed to be a short working holiday. Turns out to be a forever move.
Yeah.
And I worked in several different large hospitals. When I came over to Perth back in the early 90s, I worked in King Edward Memorial Hospital, Princess Margaret Hospital, and I spent over 20 years working in that profession as a neonatal intensive care midwife. So things were going pretty well for me until one day when a virus destroyed pretty much all of my hearing.
Oh,
so the nerves were damaged. There's nothing that could be done and my hearing loss was permanent. So that meant that it was no longer safe or practical to work in my chosen profession. And that was the only career that I'd ever known. And it was devastating having to walk away from that career. And it left me with that big question of, you know, why did this have to happen to me? What on earth am I going to do for the rest of my career? And who's going to even employ me or give me an opportunity? Because at that stage, I was already over the age of 40.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. I was thinking, what age were you at this point?
Yeah, so this was, a big blow in my life, and I really didn't know how to move forward. So I was left with a tiny amount of sound on one side only, and then I had to navigate the sort of world of significant hearing impairment as well as, you know, losing my career and all the feelings that go along with that. I went back to uni, finished off an MBA, and I moved into the Department of Health. I worked for the Commonwealth Department of Health as a public servant, still in a sort of the area of health. So I was able to sort of bring my background and skills. But that turned out to be a pretty unhealthy workplace. It was quite toxic and there was a lot of bullying behavior. It was very, very difficult for me to really get my head around this whole new environment.
Sort of government political sort of landscape, is it? Was it politics, really? Is that what you're referring to? Or?
No, it wasn't politics. No. It was the culture. It was the culture of the organization. There were toxic people and relationships and bullying. It just wasn't a nice place to work.
Yeah,
and I'd never experienced that before. So as a result of being in that environment, my self-esteem and my self-confidence just sort of drained away. I had none left. And I became afraid to speak up and became very withdrawn. So I then met a chap called Professor Rajan, who's an expert in hearing technology. At the time, he was working out of the University of Western Australia, and he invited me to take part of his research trial. So I got the gift of a cochlear implant. So that was the beginning of my journey in learning to hear again in a very different way. And it took a lot of rehabilitation because the cochlear implant, in case anybody doesn't know about the device, it's not plug and play. The hard work starts once you actually get the device. You've got to lay down new neural pathways and train the brain to hear in a very different way. So that took a lot of commitment and a lot of work, and it was a very slow process. And it was during that process that I became interested in public speaking, because I was spending a lot of time listening, a lot of time sounding out words, articulating words, and I also needed to rebuild the confidence that I'd lost. So I started this journey of public speaking about 10 years ago now. And when I decide that I'm going to do something, I tend to jump right in and immerse myself. So I got, you know, books and films and videos, and I got the best coaches that I could afford, and I did courses and workshops. And I'm starting to really enjoy it and became pretty good at it. And I thought, well, you know, I've been given this amazing gift of a cochlear implant through this research trial, and really I need to find a way to give back. And I decided that I wanted to become a public speaking coach. So I did certifications in public speaking coaching and began to help others to have the confidence to step up and speak. Because when you have a fear of public speaking or you're nervous about public speaking, it really does get in the way of your career development, of your success. You know, such a simple thing, being able to stand up and talk about your business or talk about what you do or share your ideas or even be successful at an interview. And yet there are so many people who have this fear that holds them back. So I studied public speaking coaching. That led on to being a TEDx speaker coach. I've done that for the last 6 years. That's a volunteer role. I've got a training company called Speaking Savvy, and I do a combination of one-on-one coaching sessions, group coaching sessions, workshops, training, mentoring, a range of things. And then 4 years ago, I got into storytelling and I decided to create a charity show called Stories from the Heart. And again, that's really all about empowering others to step up and share their story, because we've all got stories worth sharing. So that charity event has been running ever since then. And I've put it in Fringe Show as well. So I've got the Fringe Show, show happening. And just recently I've branched out and I'm doing more things around the soft skills space. So I've got a soft skills academy. We're looking at emotional intelligence, you know, listening, negotiation, persuasion, influence, all those skills that are not taught well at uni, but the skills that are absolutely essential for the job. So like a lot of people, I am in business by accident, initially by accident. You know, I didn't choose my destination, but sometimes life throws lemons, curveballs, whatever at you along the way. And you can either fall in a heap and not do anything again, feel sorry for yourself, or you can pick yourself up, use what skills you have, or learn new skills.
Learning, yeah.
And definitely. You decide that you're going to take back control of your life. And it was very hard when I started a business, because even though I'd done an MBA, you know, the units around entrepreneurial life or running a business or mindset, were not available back then. It was pretty much accounting and HR and economics. So I knew nothing about running a business.
People, when they talk about the MBAs and stuff, I'm not disputing there's value in them, but there's a lot of theory, isn't it? It's not so much the practice. It's not the skills of doing. It's more this theory of learning.
Yeah. I think they're different now, but back then I did mine a long time ago, because I'd already started it when I was still working as a midwife in management. Now you have entrepreneurship. You know, now you have on the job, you do projects, you do different things, because they have that intensive 1 year MBA. So most people are already out in the workplace, but yeah, mine was quite different. So yeah, probably there wasn't a lot of it that was very useful, because as you would know, when you start a business, you bring your particular area of expertise, but you've got to wear all the hats.
So that gives you the confidence at that point. It's still for you to go and do that. It gives you the confidence to, it's more of a confidence thing really, isn't it? To learn the theory and to feel like you're to sort of set yourself on the right track and persevere with it, and you're doing something about it. It's a tangible thing. It's you're paying money for the course. You know, you're making conscious decisions to actually go down the path that you're determined, I guess.
And I didn't go cold turkey. I did stay in the workplace. Yeah. So I transitioned from a job to my business. And there are two schools of thoughts around that. You know, some people would say, well, you're not serious unless you quit your job and jump right into your business. But I tend to disagree. You know, staying part-time in my business and slowly transitioning out, which is one of the real benefits of working in the public service. I was able to have the resources that I needed. There was no pressure around getting clients or what I was spending on my business. But it did mean that in that last year, I had to work really hard. I was working 7 days a week at one point as the business was growing and as I was winding back the job. So when people sort of say to me, I want to start a business, but I've got a job, what shall I do? Shall I quit my job? I think there's no right or real answer.
Yeah. I agree with you 100%. I think that, and it's also taking calculated risks, because if you're making the leap of faith to go and do something like that, and you have the, it gives you the security. It buys you time as far as financially, but it also buys you time as far as you're always finding your feet, you're always learning, you're always working out your direction. Having that work or having that employment or having that income even is just a, and it's, you know, so I'm with you. I don't think there's one way or another. I think everybody's different, and I agree with you 100%. It's interesting how much you've done in a short period of time. It's you never mentioned the radio either, so you do the radio as well. So it's
so that was a bit of a COVID opportunity that came about, because having a lot more time on my hands. Usually my job now involves a lot of travel, both national and international, speaking and coaching and training, but that all came to a halt for us all in March. And so I had more time on my hands, and I thought, well, rather than, you know, sit at home and do very little, I would actually find some way of giving back to the community. So this opportunity came up, and I came along and had a chat with Sue, our lovely chairperson on the board, and I came along wanting to just do a little bit of behind the scenes helping out in some way. So landing a radio show, morning show, has been an incredible journey, and again another way to give back.
Yeah, and it's been, your show's fantastic. It's been very well received, and it's a good place to be with so many personalities around the place that offer good value and knowledge and experience. And it's not, I certainly enjoy being here. So going back to the cochlear implant side of things, so just at that point in your life, that's something that I'm curious about, so which I didn't know about as well. And people talk about setbacks, and people talk about, you know, things that happen, and you might be going in the right direction, 100 miles an hour, everything's going great, and then something like that can happen. And at that point in your life, did you have the kids? Did you have children and stuff like that?
Yeah.
you had the children, and you know, so it's a big change for you. Would you class it as a setback? Is that the right word? In hindsight, looking back, probably not.
About a setback, it was a complete life change.
Yeah.
Everything, life as I knew it, was just thrown up in the air, and I had to start from scratch. So not only health and career, you know, everything really, as well as this sort of long journey in rehabilitation. So I wasn't quite sure what was in store for me. And I guess, call it a setback. But also, you know, in the setback is the opportunity.
It's the opportunity
to come back better than you were, to come back with a different lens. And I guess, you know, the biggest things I've learned through that are resilience and tenacity and grit and not giving up. And also the belief in that whatever career you've done before, you'll bring skills and experience and wisdom and knowledge that you can apply to any other career. Now, young people today have sort of the portfolio of careers, and they're not expected to do one thing for life. But pretty much, you know, when I left school and I became a nurse, I thought that would be my always career. And if I hadn't have lost my hearing, I would probably still be working as a nurse. There's not a day goes by that I don't miss that.
Yep.
Particularly being a midwife. But I believe that, you know, for the 20, almost 25 years that was my job, I am bringing a lot to what I offer now. And of course, in the world of, you know, coaching, speaking, training, any business really, we need to be able to play to our strengths and also carve out our uniqueness. You know, it's what sets us apart that really gives us that competitive edge. And really helps you tap into your ideal clients, because people want to work with you because of you and your journey and the experience you have, as well as the knowledge that you've got.
I agree with you 100% as well. I think that skills are definitely transferable. You know, even when I was at high school, I remember my parents, it was always still at that point about what you're going to do when you grow up sort of question. You know, what are you going to do when you grow up? I want to be, I want to work in the bank, for argument's sake. Okay, that's all you're ever going to do for the rest of your life. And I think 100%, I think it's shifted in the last however many years. I don't know the number, but it's definitely shifted to the point that I think that people do change and people do adapt and people do, you know, change roles and yeah. start new businesses. And what's interesting about what you said is, and that's why I asked the question about the setback, I think it's some things that's determined by the type of person you are. I think that if you do suffer setbacks, and we all have setbacks in our life, yeah. whether professionally or personally, we have setbacks. And I think that some people, you know, a setback does set them back, essentially. It does put yeah. them back 4 or 5 years, whereas you're not that way. You're probably to the other side where you roll up your, or you are to the other side, not probably. You roll yeah. up your sleeves and you say, right, what am I going to do about it? How am I going to tackle it? And how am I yeah. going to come out the other side yeah. even better than I was before? Not just to survive.
Yeah.
And based on what you're telling me, it sounds like that's very much what's happened. And I think there's a lot of value in that. What's your thought processes as far as, is there fear? Is there, you know, excitement with new challenges? Is there, what's your feelings and how are you feeling about that thing?
Well, I guess when I first lost my hearing and was going through all the medical challenges, the feelings were devastation, you know, loss, yeah. Grief, those kinds of negative emotions. And it's very hard to pick yourself up when you're feeling that way. And I really didn't know what I was going to do at that point. So then that was a period of time where I wasn't being that productive or really thinking too far into the future, because yeah. I was too focused on what I'd lost
yes.
and what I was going to have to leave behind. And then there comes that point where you know that this is the real world, mm-hmm. and then the acceptance and the moving on happens.
Do you think that's what happens with the people that get set back? Do you think that they get stuck in that frame of mind where they're worrying about what they've lost and what they've lost only? I think it's natural,
yeah. but it's how long you allow yourself to stay stuck,
yeah.
because it is a choice. It's ourselves that has to say, right, it's now time to change direction or get out of this, step out of this hole, or start doing something positive towards this change. And of course, when you are then faced with, now at that point, I still had a job, and public speaking was really sort of a hobby that I was starting to really enjoy. And it was when people were saying, oh, will you coach me? Do you do lessons? Have you got books? Have you got courses? Yeah. That I started to think, oh, okay,
it's amazing how organically things can happen. Though, yeah. You know? It's like, it's brilliant. It's really exciting. It's exciting that things can sort of happen. And obviously you have to be good at it. You know, you can't be.
Well, I didn't realize at the time I was, because I didn't have much in the way of self-confidence. But it was interesting how other people were believing in me. So other people were asking me to coach them initially, you know, as a volunteer. And then when I started to heavily invest in my own professional development and get the coaches and get the mentoring and resources, and then start building up my sort of certification and getting all the accreditations, that I started to feel more comfortable with charging. So then when I made that decision, it was late 2014, that I decided to start a business. That first year, really not a lot happened. I bought a domain name, registered the business, and just sort of started putting little things out there, and had to learn everything from scratch, and marketing myself, websites, small business financials, all those things that I hadn't even considered before. And then that second year, I started to actually take on some clients, and the business sort of built and built. And that's when I really started to feel excited mm-hmm. about the picking up momentum. And then with the excitement, the confidence grew. Yes. And, you know, you get a few customers under your belt and you realize that you have got the ability to change people's lives
yes.
in a positive way, and that's a very, very good feeling.
I think that what you said there with the confidence as well, as you get the clients and as the confidence grows, I think that's important, because a lot of people, not everybody's confident to begin with. Not everybody starts their business, you know, 100% certain that they're capable of doing what they can do necessarily. They might think they can, but until you actually get the people, the perception of what people are actually saying about you and what the feedback that you're getting. That's what builds the confidence as well. So I think it's important to, and it's interesting to hear, and it's certainly because you've had such a shift and change in career paths, you know, your confidence is maybe lesser, but you've also got the self-confidence of giving it a go.
Yeah.
You've also got the self-confidence to say, well, yeah, I'm going to do it anyway, regardless if I feel that way or not. And that's important. I think that's some things what I think from the people that I've spoken to is, in my own experiences as well, is actually just taking the shot anyway, regardless if you don't feel that way, regardless if you don't feel the most confident in the world, still take the shot anyway and give it a go and see what happens, you know, and then you look back in hindsight, over the period of time you've been doing it now, and you probably say to yourself, well, what was I worried about, really? You know, and that's what people say. Yeah. What was I worried about?
And also in the early days, you know, we spend a lot of time worrying about what other people think of
yeah.
us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the saying goes, it's none of our business what other people think of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as we're being our best self and bringing our best selves to whatever we do and that we remain true to our values, then I think that, yeah, give it a go.
That's what I hear. And I think that, again, goes back to that point in time in your journey where you've really got two options. You either sink or swim, or you say I'm doing this or I'm doing that. And if I'm doing this, and as you said, I'm all in. If I do something, I'm all in. So I'll make the decision, I'm all in, that's what I'm doing. I'm going to learn, I'm going to read, I'm going to find the people that can help me get to where I want to get to, and then I'm going to go down that path. And that's exactly obviously what you've done, isn't it?
And something you said there that just reminded me, one of the things that I in hindsight could have done a lot better earlier is ask people to help me. I've always been better at offering to help others than asking for help myself. And I think that I could have saved myself from a lot of costly mistakes and also got some shortcuts earlier. So that would be something I would definitely change.
Get there quicker. And that's partly why I kind of do what I do at the moment. I feel like I never had any assistance. No assistance, no help. I did everything myself, essentially. And then I come out the other side of it and thought, people need to know about the help they can get. Yeah. People need to find out where they can ask for help. And it's quite refreshing to hear you talk about that. So again, just talking about the cochlear implant, is that do you think by listening ardently, by listening better, by through that process, it wasn't plug and play, as you mentioned. So you have to go up through a process of maybe learning how to listen, learning how to listen better. Do you think that made you a more confident and better, or more articulate and confident speaker from that process? Do you think that's where it started? Or
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely part of it. Definitely.
Because you start, if you're listening to people, you start when you're listening properly, because we all say we listen.
Yep.
We all say we listen, but we don't always necessarily listen properly or actively. And by listening to what's going on and cutting out the noise as such.
Yep.
You probably start to learn a lot more, I'd imagine.
Definitely. And listening is a journey. I think that it's something that we constantly have to practice and remind ourselves to do it better. Yeah.
So moving forward then, so you go down the, is public speaking the right term? Go down the public speaking path or speaking coaching?
Yeah, so became a public speaking coach and then at the same time decided that I wanted to be a professional speaker. So this was going to be my full-time job and I wanted to be standing on stage or front of the camera, wherever. I used to be on stage as a keynote speaker, offering advice and motivation, inspiration, teaching and sharing wisdom, if you like, through the power of words and stories. And I also teach people mentor people how to become a professional speaker. So I don't do anything, I don't teach anything that I haven't done myself. So that's another group of clients that I also help people that, like me, want to have a message, have a talk inside them or something that they want to share, but they don't know how to package that up and do that.
Because I think it's amazing that I'm of the belief that it can be taught. I'm of the belief that it can be learned, but I think it's one of those things that most people stray away from. I think it's, and I've met some very successful people recently. I can tell that they're nervous even coming into the radio. Yeah. So I can tell that they're nervous in that environment.
Yeah.
And I don't think they're the exact same, but I think that, it's just you can be very successful. You could be, well-versed in conversation amongst your peers and your business and staff and things like that. But when it comes to moving yourself outside that, it's something that people really struggle with. And I think it's got fantastic value in it. But I'm curious about, did you ever enjoy speaking before? Was there, previous jobs? No,
I didn't. And when I went through sort of the illness and that real knock in self-confidence, plus ending up working in that awful toxic workplace, then I had no self-confidence at the end of that. I had zero self-confidence. So, building up that was also part of this stepping out of my comfort zone and learning to speak in public in a very sort of safe and supportive way. So initially, I wasn't willing to put myself out there. It was very, very small steps over a period of time.
What's your first memory of public speaking when you were not professionally, but as a kid or something?
I don't remember much about speaking at school. Yeah. I remember as a midwife having to, we used to run the antenatal and parenting classes.
Ah, yes, I've been to them.
And as a student midwife, my role was to sort of make the tea and move the chairs, and the senior midwife would lead the lesson. There used to be like 6 or 8 lessons in the course that the parents would come along every week. This was way before the internet.
Yeah.
So these classes, people would come along. And there was this one week where the senior midwife got called away to do a delivery, and I was the only one there. And I had to lead the class, and my teeth were chattering. My knees were knocking. I was only 20-something.
Yeah.
My knees were knocking, and I had this ragdoll baby that we used to use to kind of demonstrate, you know, and the baby dropped on the floor with the umbilical cord hanging. The whole thing was just a complete disaster. And these people that were sitting in front of me, there would have been about 50 or 60 people, in their eyes, they were looking for trust, and they were looking for somebody who they would feel safe with. And here was I making a complete mess of it. And I knew that I was making a mess of it, but it was a combination of lack of planning and preparation. Fear and anxiety took over. And then after that, I never wanted to do it again. Yeah.
That's why I asked, because it's, I know that there'll be people listening, and they'll be sort of thinking to themselves, public speaking, oh God, I'm scared of public speaking. Yeah. And my earliest memories, and it's funny hearing you talking about the shaky legs or the sweaty hands or the dropping things, you know, because for someone that does it as a profession, to have lived through that and have experienced that, it's quite, I'm assuming it's going to be quite reassuring. It's reassuring for myself, but it's also reassuring for other people that are thinking about doing something similar or wanting to improve, at least. Because my earliest memories of public speaking was at primary school. And I remember having to read paragraphs of books in the class in Scotland. And I used to be so scared.
Did you? Yeah.
And people used to laugh at you, if you pronounced words, you know, kids are mean, obviously, but if you pronounce words wrong, people would laugh at you. And then it grows into, like, you know, talking on stage at school plays or all that stuff. And I'm thinking, God, I used to hate it. I used to be so scared of it. And, you know, I'm not the best public speaker by any means. It's something that would scare me now, to be honest.
But what changed for you? What changed?
I wouldn't think that I'm a confident public speaker anyway, to be honest.
Well, you've got a radio show.
No, I know. But I think it comes down to doing what you said. And I think it comes down to every now and then just stepping outside your comfort zone.
Yeah.
And just, it's good for you. I think it's healthy. I think it's healthy to do things that are alien to you that you just think, what the hell? What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah. And keep on doing that. Yeah. So when you step outside of your comfort zone, and then that becomes, okay, well, this feels good. What else can I do to step out of my comfort zone? I did stand-up comedy, and that was scary as. And I then tried improv acting, and I loved it. I still do improv acting.
Oh, awesome.
You know, and it still scares me when I do that, because there's no script and there's But it's about still embracing that feeling of discomfort. And also it helps me, you know, understand where a lot of my clients are coming from.
You mentioned about the preparation. So when you were referring to the experience of doing the shoe-in for the antenatal class. So when you mentioned about the preparation. And I think the preparation is something that certainly can be learned. So that's something that I'm hoping to learn a bit more about it, obviously. But I'm assuming that for anyone that wants to learn how to be better at public speaking, be prepared, I guess. Yep. That's one of the things that you need to do.
Exactly. You know? Planning, preparation and practice. Yeah. And they're the bits that nobody wants to hear, because it takes work. Now, a lot of the times when we're in a job or a role, we might not have the benefit of a lot of time to plan. Sometimes you just have to jump on your feet and do a talk or give a presentation. Now, sort of spontaneous, off-the-cuff speaking is a different skill set, different sort of rules and tips around that. But the more you plan, prepare and practice, the more comfortable and confident you will feel, and also the more prepared you are in case something should go wrong.
Yes.
Yeah. You've thought about that. So 4 main areas that are really critical to your planning is, number 1, knowing your audience. So who are going to be in the seats? Who's going to be the other side of the microphone or the camera? How many of them are there? It's very different speaking to six people compared to speaking to 60 or 600 people. Yeah. So how many are going to be there? What is their level of understanding of your topic? Yes. What do they need to know? What do they want to know? So finding out a little bit about the demographics, knowing your content really well. So are you across your content? Are you familiar with it? Are you interested and excited about your own topic? Because otherwise you can't expect others to be. Yeah. You know, so choosing a topic is really another whole area of speaking preparation. And knowing your environment's also really important. So what's the setup going to be? If you're going to go to a different venue and speak somewhere for the first time, you don't want to just walk through the door 10 minutes before the presentation. You know, I'll go and check out that place the day before, the week before. Yeah. Get there early, get prepared, have all your equipment ready. You know, nothing's worse than you turn up at an event and the guest speaker's still plugging in cables and unpacking their computer and getting their slide. It just doesn't look professional. So spending that extra time, you know, a lot of it is preparation. For every 15 minutes that you're on stage speaking, there'll be hours and hours of preparation behind that. But it's that work in preparing that then sets you up that you can deal with the challenges as they come along. And those challenges don't have to throw you.
It's that whole thing, is it field to plan to fail, you know.
Exactly. it works for whatever business you're in. And if you don't do the work, well, you take your chance. You know, a lot of my clients will say that they wing it. And my answer to that is winging it is not a strategy. It might work for a short period of time, but there'll be one day when you will get caught out and it will no longer serve you. So you've got a choice. You can either aim to be the best that you can be, or you can risk, you know, losing your confidence and credibility and that trust and rapport that you've built up with people.
Yeah, and being the best you can be. So if you're a professional, you want to master your craft. You want to get better at what you do and you want to improve upon what you do constantly.
Yeah.
And obviously the preparation is part of that. So what was your first event or first sort of thing you had to do that you was like the first scary thing that you had to do after doing all this learning? What was the first one? So you said the stand-up comedy, you did the improv, but professionally, was there anything that sort of springs to mind?
I started small and I started off doing like a little free seminar and I sort of built from that. There's been lots of scary moments, but I can't pinpoint one that's any more scary than the other. I guess, you know, it depends on the level of stakes at the presentation.
Yes.
It depends on the topic and the familiarity with the topic. There's so many different variables. And, you know, I still experience those sensations in the body that a lot of people would label as fear or nerves or anxiety.
Yes.
But I just call it energy. That's all it is. There's no real threat from standing up in front of a group of people. You know, it's just we've got that very sophisticated yet primitive brain that will send us into fight, flight or freeze, even when it's a perceived threat. So it's learning how to manage those feelings of nervousness or energy, as I call it, to your advantage. It's good to have energy on board and it's good to still experience those feelings. It means that you care about what you do and it means that you are, you know, showing up as your full self, experiencing that, being willing to be vulnerable and open and authentic. People want authentic speakers and presenters.
Yeah.
We don't want robots who have learnt every single word. We don't want people who are reading from slides or notes. We want a real person who is sharing their journey and their story. If they've got a few ums and ahs, that's okay. If they miss a couple of words, you know, that's okay. But I'd still sort of say, look, get some training, get some coaching. Wherever you are on the journey, there's always more to learn. If you feel comfortable with speaking, then learn to be a better storyteller.
What about the people that can just, what about the ones that can just stand up and talk? Are they just managing their energy better or what are they doing? You know, there's certain people that you can just click their fingers and turn their hands to anything. Fair to say that somebody could just, you know, they might not be, as a professional, you might be able to critique their work, but there'd be other people that wouldn't be, they would just do it anyway, and they would just get up and do it, and other people would think it was good, you know. So what are those people doing differently, or what's their persona, or what's why are they doing it and others wouldn't, you know? What's the
I think it definitely is a learned skill.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, you know, you've either got it or you haven't. I believe that it's a learned skill. We're not born to be amazing orators or speakers.
Yeah.
It is something that they have probably worked on, invested in. Warren Buffett says the best thing you can do is to get better at speaking in business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the best speakers make it look completely effortless. Yeah. And yet so much effort has gone into making that look really natural. A bit like when you go and watch stand-up comedians,
yes.
Just looks like they stood up and they've just shared it for the very first time.
Yeah,
and yet they've worked that joke and they've done their timing and they've done spent so much effort into perfecting their craft. So I don't believe people can just sort of stand up and do it.
Yep.
I believe that the people who do it well are those who are willing to take risks. They're willing to step out of their comfort zone. They are willing to seek guidance and mentoring, and feedback is really important as well. Getting the right type of feedback, and also speaking at every opportunity, whether it is having a radio interview, speaking at the PNC, putting your hand up to lead a meeting, doing a reading at church. So there's so many different aspects. It hasn't got to be always associated with the big presentation at work. But if you are somebody who either lacks the skills and tools to be an effective speaker, or you are overcome with nervousness, that can become a barrier, which can then impede your success in your career and your business. You know, if you're running a business, you're the marketing department.
That's right.
And if you can't stand up and clearly and confidently articulate what you do and the value that you bring, who's going to buy from you?
Yeah, and I think that's that you hit the nail on the head there. Certainly with business, it's, and you spoke off air about the message, didn't you? You mentioned the message and getting your message across as a business owner, or you, as you said, you're marketing your business. You are the marketing department of your business.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of people struggle with, to be honest. It's the elevator pitch thing, or it's being concise and getting the message across as in a simple format that people can understand quickly.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's a thing that people do struggle with. It's, you know, I could meet many, many people and ask them what they do for a living, and they would struggle to articulate it to me.
And then you switch off, and you move on to the next thing. Exactly.
And I think we're living in an environment where everything's time, everybody's time poor, everything's going to become quicker, faster, everything. And so getting better at that is becoming more important all the time.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's something that you help people with, getting that message, how to convey it, how to articulate it.
Yeah, clarity is really, really important. So how to get your message across in a clear, confident and articulate way, using the right words, using the right medium, you know, structure is really, really important, as well as the delivery style as well. And sort of going back to the point you made about marketing your business, I'm always surprised by the number of business owners I meet who tell me how much money they're spending on SEO advertising, keyword advertising. And I say, how about guest speaking?
Yeah.
And they say, oh, I haven't done any guest speaking. Well, that's free for you. If you're good at it, they'll pay you to do it. But that's free. Stand up in front of other people, because if there's one person you can help that night or that day, you've made a difference. And it's better than anything that you can pay for
marketing. I agree 100%. Actually, it's interesting you say that, because I – but generally speaking, when I deal with startup businesses in particular, they'll – the first thing they want to do is social media, and the first thing they want to do. So they want to do, what are you going to do to market your business? I'm going to use social media. I'm going to do Google Ads. I'm going to do SEO, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion, very much the same as yourself, where yes, it might not be guest speaking, but get out and see people. Get out and talk to people.
Have one-to-ones.
Yeah, you don't need to spend money. You don't need to spend money. Get out and find people, build relationships with people that you can meet that'll, and do the SEO and do the social media later. But those relationships, by getting out and seeing people, that's your basis for building your business. That's your basis for, and then grow the other stuff around that later on. But it's funny, because I think we've went a wee bit sideways with the whole, we've all become a little bit disconnected, I think, as far as it's very easy. And I was guilty of it for a number of years, where you can sit in front of the computer and just send an email to someone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But there's a lot to be said, and I think people are, well, in my own experiences, actually, I've been, the reception that I've got by actually going to see someone, sometimes they're just surprised that you've even got off your bum to go and see them, you know?
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be said about doing those sorts of things and putting yourself in situations like you said about, I would never have thought to do guest speaking, to be honest. Mm. It's not a marketing strategy I would ever consider, but it makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Put yourself in an environment where there's 20 or 30 people within your industry.
Yep.
That might listen to one thing and get one client from
it. Yeah, and there's so many different ways that you can do it. Being a guest on a podcast,
yeah.
I've got a whole lot of tips on how you can be a good guest and how you can pitch to be a guest on a podcast. Be on a radio show. You know, so many different ways to share your ideas. Do a Zoom, put together a little short webinar. You can do this stuff on your phone these days. You don't need a lot of resources. A lot of people don't do it because they're making excuses. Haven't got the right phone, haven't got the right camera, haven't got a microphone, haven't got this, haven't got that. But really it's fear and of course fear and procrastination go hand in hand. So going out and guest speaking. There's many different business associations that always looking for guest speakers, and then that becomes your practice ground.
Yeah, and learn your skill and learn your craft, as you said, get better at it. And
then when you get really good at speaking and you learn the subtle elements of what we call sell from stage, you can sell in a very authentic way without selling.
Yes.
And we can do that through the art of speaking much better than we can through SEO.
It's funny, actually, that's something that, because I'm quite sales orientated, and that's something I was listening to you when you're saying that. Selling without selling, and teach people about sales, I'm going to say sales processes, sales strategic sort of messaging and things like that. I mean, there's a lot to do with word choice. There's a lot to do with the words that you use and the words that you shouldn't use. There's a lot to do with your body language. There's a lot to do with the act of listening. And I guess there's a wee bit of similarities between the speaking, isn't there? There's probably going to be. Would you be telling someone, dependent on their platform and dependent on the market, I'm assuming, but would you be telling client specific words not to use, for instance, and specific things not to say? Would that ever come into it?
When we're crafting the presentation together. It would depend on the situation and the message. Yeah. I mean, but one general tip would be to watch out for the, we call it the I versus you ratio.
Yes.
So the number of times that you use, I. So you always want to make your presentation about the person listening. And the other thing that you want to do is you want to make each and every person in your audience, whether you've got 6 or you've got 200, you want them to feel as though you are speaking just to them. So that they feel individual. And what a lot of speakers do is they'll say things like, how many of you did this, or how many of you? And if you're sitting, you and I are sitting having a conversation now, I wouldn't say how many of you when I meant you.
Just me, yes.
I would say, have you ever? Because you've got to look to many, speak to one, one of my speaking mentors, Craig Valentine, always said. And those are wise words. So, crafting your presentation, when I work with clients one-on-one, we spend as much time on the delivery as well as crafting the presentation. So they've got, the right words, the right structure. And depending on what the outcome is, I mean, a presentation always has to have an outcome.
Yes.
We need to know the outcome first. The outcome might not be anything to do with selling, or it may be. Mm-hmm. So, if the outcome is that by the end of the presentation you want people to have bought a product, well, then the whole presentation is set up very differently to, let's say, your presentation is around accepting an award.
Mm-hmm. Totally different outcomes. That makes sense. I keep hearing the sort of same, like not necessarily the same content, but I keep hearing the same things about being practiced and being prepared and being, being organized, really, and having a structure, a structure to what you want to achieve, not just getting up and doing something for the sake of it, basically. Yeah. So, Lisa, your story then. So, learn a bit about public speaking and, the craft of it, and a little bit more about that. But what about just going back to your journey? Because you've got a successful business, and we can all learn from one another as far as our business stories and our journeys. And so, we spoke about having confidence to start with, and actually just taking the punt anyway and backing yourself and getting better at it and using all the resources available to you. And you mentioned that, maybe you should have asked for help earlier if you could have, but you come out the other side, you've been very successful. And what are you doing? What sort of things are you doing to grow your business at that point? So you start off by doing some free events, I guess, or free workshops with clients and prospective clients. Confidence builds. What other things are? How are you looking to grow your business? What are you thinking? What's your direction? And what are you?
Yeah, I think, well, now I am much better at delegating.
Yeah.
So knowing sort of my worth and my value and the skills that I should be focusing on versus trying to do everything and micromanage. So letting go was one of the big things that I had to learn to do. And I had some early bad experiences with outsourcing things. Yeah. You know, I hadn't done the right research. I hadn't provided the right support. So I had some real disasters with outsourcing. So for the next couple of years, I decided that, you know, outsourcing was bad and I was going to be doing it all. And then my workload just increased and I wasn't as effective. So this past year, I've really focused on finding the right people to outsource.
Yeah.
So my tip around outsourcing will be don't try and find a generalist. There's no such thing as a super VA. Find a specialist. So that might mean you're employing 10 people. You know, start off with one, then get a second one. So I've got a lady who's a branding expert. I've got a lady who's a back-end web dev expert. I've got two amazing general VAs who are based over in South Australia. Most of my virtual assistants are based here in Australia rather than offshore. And then when you find these great people, you know, hang on to them and give them the work and build up that relationship. So that's taken a lot of pressure off me, knowing that some simple tasks are done. In terms of the direction, well, look, things changed a lot for everybody this year. And I guess, what I've got on the agenda for the new year is really carrying on with the launch of my new business, which is the Soft Skills Academy. So not only speaking, all things communicating, listening, influence, persuasion, and emotional intelligence as well. So, you know, soft skills are so important in the workplace. So I've got a lot more to do around sort of developing that side of it, building a new website that's in the process at the moment. Continuing with marketing. Now, my tip around marketing would be get good on one platform before you try and scatter yourself across 10 different platforms, which a lot of people do early on. And also pick the platform where your clients are. So my clients are not on Facebook. So I have to constantly remind myself that Facebook is there for me to touch base with my friends and colleagues, to have a little bit of fun with memes. My clients are on LinkedIn. So that's where I need to be focusing my marketing efforts and be really disciplined with that, whether it's reach out to 50 new people every day, you know, how many coffee conversations am I having. The other thing that I would say would be a really good tip is around money mindset, about setting your pricing and knowing your own value. And the only way that you really get to know your own value is by the difference that you make to your clients. So start collecting your own research about the changes that happen before and after people work with you. You know, gather testimonials, do your own little market research, because then when you realize that, you know, somebody, let's say for just a hypothetical, somebody's invested in 3 coaching sessions with you. And as a result of the 3 coaching sessions, they've gone and won a 6-figure deal, or they've gone and got this promotion, or they've won an award. Well, that is, the value of that is far more than the dollar value of the 3 coaching sessions that they had with you. So a lot of people who are stuck on pricing, or they are playing small and they are setting their prices too low, are simply not able to articulate the value that they bring. So when you can start to speak in terms of the value that you bring, then it doesn't become about the prices.
Because you can get caught up in that thing, can't you? You can get caught up in that dollar, the price thing. It's great advice what you've said. I agree with you 100% on that. I think it's, if you can find the tangible results, like you mentioned, if you can look for the results and monitor the results yourself within your own business, that gives you another basis to evaluate your pricing and how, if you're in the right place and the industry that because the coaching industry, the mentoring, the consultancy, you know, the one-to-one sort of industries, that's something that people do struggle with. It's how much they charge per hour, or it's how much they put, what price do they put on themselves? What value do they put on themselves?
Yeah, it's highly saturated, the coaching market. It's also unregulated as well.
That's right,
so there are so many people to choose from. And that's why choosing somebody who you can resonate with, who's perhaps have a look at their backstory, where have they come from, what have they done in terms of their professional development, their certifications, or their life skills and experience. And I'd always say, you know, try before you buy as well. Don't get locked into any expensive contracts. I like to engage. I've got always 2 or 3 coaches and mentors that I work with at any one time. And I like to engage people who are specialists at this stage. So it might be a specialist vocal coach, or it might be a performance coach, or it might be a marketing coach or whatever, and for a shorter period of time. And then the other person that I always like on my team is some sort of an accountability coach. I'm big on accountability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's like you said, it's not finding a generalist, it's finding a specialist, as you said.
Yeah, somebody who resonates. You know, ideally, a mentor needs to be somebody who has walked the path that you are on. So if I am looking for coaches and mentors, I'm probably going to turn to the speaking industry because obviously that's my industry. And those that I admire are those who are, you know, 10 steps or more ahead of me. They've made the costly mistakes. They're going to be able to share with me the shortcuts and also, you know, understand where I'm coming from.
For people that sort of struggle finding knowing the direction that they want to head, the path that they want to head down, obviously you mentioned COVID and that everybody took a bit of a sidestep, but that struggle to find their direction. I know I've seen that you do the vision board things, don't you? Or the storytelling boards.
Sketchnoting, you mean?
Yes, the sketchnoting. What's that? Is that to do with sort of visualizing your goals or what you're looking at there?
Yeah, so sketchnoting. So I don't use scripts at all and I don't memorize my content. Most people either use a script or they start off with a script or they memorize their content, and of course you just sound like a robot. So I got into sketchnoting as a way of storyboarding my talks. I write a speech, in inverted commas, it is a series of drawings that becomes like a movie trailer. So when I stand up and speak like at a conference or whatever, then I see my talk as a series of images.
And do you
images.
Use that in front of you then?
Once I've drawn it, then I don't need to have it in front of me. But that's the process that I've used. And, sketchnoting and graphic recording is a thing, a way of visually capturing ideas and content, whether it's a book review. I did a book review yesterday, or it's a TEDx talk or somebody's idea. And so initially I was only doing it for myself, and then I started doing it for clients and other people. So, it's a way of, using a different part of the brain to visualize things that you want to remember. Yeah, but in terms of, if you don't know what you want to do, I would recommend the book Ikigai. So having a look at the whole Ikigai principle of finding that sweet spot between what you love to do, what you know how to do, what the world wants and who's going to pay you for it. Those are the kind of those four areas. I wrote a blog on it a couple of weeks ago. And because what sometimes I find, when I'm doing business coaching with people, is they might have a great idea, or they've got an idea for a talk or a business, but they haven't really done the market research and they haven't found out whether there are people out there who are willing to pay for that. Mm-hmm. So if you go down that path, you're not going to succeed, because it's not a hot thing. So there's got to be that balance between what you know, what you love, but also are people looking for that right now? And that's where you've got to do your research to start with.
What do you enjoy yourself the most nowadays? What do you, looking in hindsight back to what you were doing with the midwifery and everything, and you've had a massive career change, a successful career change. What brings you most enjoyment now? What sort of daily things do you enjoy doing the most?
Well, in business, I get so much joy out of empowering others to step up and sharing a message and a story. On a sort of a day-to-day level, I enjoy spending time with my family, with my greyhound giraffe, Jerry Giraffe, and enjoying really the freedom of being able to work when I want, but most importantly with who I want to work with. So I choose my clients.
Yes.
And we've got to have a values alignment, because I invest a lot of time and effort in helping my clients. And when we're a right fit, then we just take off and helping them achieve all their goals, which gives me a lot of pleasure.
Yeah, and you're smiling, and that's why I think that's, business is a broad term, really. Business can still be fun. Like I talk about it all the time, and I think that do something that you want to do. Do something that you can enjoy. Put yourself in the situations that you want to be in, and enjoy doing it. It's great. I love talking to people that enjoy what they're doing. It's very refreshing. It's
Yeah.
You know, there's so many people that don't enjoy what they're doing.
Yeah. And I'm enjoying it more now. I've got some key people on board helping me do all the things that I was finding very frustrating, like back-end WordPress, mm-hmm. like SEO, like branding and graphics and those things. I mean, I could do them. I sort of learned to do a lot of this stuff, but not a good use of my time.
No, it's being where your time's best spent and most valuable. And there's certain things that you just don't want to do. There's certain things that you don't need to do as well. But it's hard to identify that for people. It's hard
And hard to let go.
It is hard to let go, yeah. And it's one thing that a lot of people I talk to, they do struggle with as well. It's the other side of that is when you do speak to someone like yourself that's managed to overcome that and then learn the process of delegating or learn that you don't need to wear all the hats of the business. The energy is different. The feeling of relief that people talk about is very consistent. It's very consistent between the people that have actually done it. It's very consistent.
And it's
a trick. It's hard to do. And so look, before we wrap up, what would be, first of all, let's think. So what would be five tips? What would you give the average? Is five too many? I don't know. But what would be sort of what would be the tips? So the average person that's listening, so let's say it's a small business owner sitting at home and they're thinking to themselves, you know, I'm growing my business, I'm doing really well, I'm getting asked to do all these things, but I'm really scared to do it. I'm scared to do the talking. I'm scared to put myself out there for the fear, as we mentioned. Mm. What would be the sort of five things you would say go and do or try?
I would say speak at every opportunity. Because every opportunity is an opportunity to serve, to share your message or knowledge or experience. And if you're not out there talking about yourself as a solo business owner, who else is? To get comfortable being uncomfortable. So, yes, it will feel scary. Yes, it will feel weird and awkward, but do it anyway. Number three, planning, practice and preparation. It's the boring stuff, but that will set you up for success. And you can then rinse and repeat that, you know, once you've got a formula and once you've got some preparations and tools and tips, then that makes it easier. Invest in a course, in a workshop, in some coaching so that you can take your skills up to that next level. Don't settle for being ordinary. Be the best that you can be. And for my final tip would be share your story. So be clear on what your story is. You know, there's a suite of stories that I recommend people have. I've got blogs about it on my website. But start off with your signature story and be comfortable sharing that as a way to go. But, you know, public speaking is the opportunity to serve, the opportunity to share your knowledge, wisdom with others. And if you don't do it, then you're denying others that gift.
Very valuable, very valuable tips. And I should have written them all down, but I'll be able to listen again later. So, Lisa, if anybody wants to use your services, if anybody wants to find you on social media or look you up and find about the services you offer in full, maybe become a client, how do they get in touch with you? Where do they find you?
My website is speakingsavvy.com.au. That's savvy with two V's. And I'm across most social media platforms, but the main platform that I play on would be LinkedIn. So you can find me, Lisa Evans Speaker, on LinkedIn. But yeah, happy to connect. And I've got lots of tools and tips and templates. I'm happy to have a free consult, jump on the phone, catch up and have a coffee, because I love sharing tips and helping people to get started or get over or move on to the next step.
And the radio show is every Thursday.
Thursday morning, 9 till 12, in good company, yeah.
So listen out for that one as well. Lisa, thanks so much. It's been really good fun. It's been nice to hear about your story. And I've learned some stuff as well. So thanks very much.
That's good. Thank you for having me, Kevin.
For joining me on this episode of the Business Growth Podcast. If you enjoyed it and you want to come back for more, don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. You can catch up with me on social media on Facebook at Make My Business Better, Instagram at Business Growth AU, or you can jump on our website www.businessgrowthperth.com.au. See you next time.